Morning, everyone. For those who don't know me, my name is Supreet, and I work at Software Radio Systems. I work mainly in the layer 2 scheduler, basically. Okay, today I'll be presenting basically about a use case of using SRS RAN project, which is 5G GNode B in uplink heavy traffic scenarios. First, I will give a brief overview of like who we are and then what we do at SRS. And then move on to talk a bit about like our CUDU solution. CU is mainly control or central unit, and then distributed unit. Like the 5G architecture is divided into multiple units. CU is analogical to RNC of the 2G or 3G, and then BTS is analogous to the DU part of it. And then talk a bit about use cases, and then what challenges we faced when trying to, let's say, implement or let's say meet the needs of this use case. And then finally, a solution, and then in the end, a demo showcasing the high uplink throughput scenario. All right, SRS is a company founded in 2012. We are headquartered mainly in Ireland, but we have offices in Spain, Ireland, and a couple of people working remotely in Germany. We do have a global customer base, but our main customer has been from the United States. We are a team of like 25 people, and we are purely a software development company. And you can see the employee locations on the map over here. As I said, we developed completely software-based radio applications, and we do have our expertise in when it comes to network development, design, and deployment, and we have the knowledge and know-how when it comes to developing the RAN, the core, and then also the UE part. We have various products like the SRS RAN UE, SRS RAN 4G, and then the EPC as well for the 4G offering. In addition to that, now we have the all new ground up developed the 5G solution as well. So we basically have the full stack expertise. Also, we do custom development on top of these standard developments based on the needs and the customers. And you know, we have the dual licensing scheme where the code is released as open source under AGPL, and then at the same time, we can also source it as like a commercial product, and we do custom developments for these commercial licensing. And one benefit from having this one is like we have the visibility over the open source. At the same time, they know they can test it and then see for themselves like the quality of the code or the product. Some of our customer stories are like the Smart Sky, wherein we provide this ground-to-air network over 2.4 gigahertz band. And in this particular project, SRS mainly developed the SmartCut, which is a lightweight software-defined radio-based testing eNode B. Also, Rocket, where we developed this production-grade eNode B, where the L2 and L3 was running with FAPI on an NXP platform. SmartScope is basically a drone-mounted scanner and a signal analyzer. Here you can see the SRS 4G, the solution for the Smart Sky has been deployed at close to 350 sites, and each site has like two of the instances of SRS. So in total, 700 instances. And another customer is AST. They provide this unique direct-to-mobile 4G, 5G network through this large phased LEO satellites. And this one basically SRS E-Node B was used for testing and then MNO demonstrations. Okay, now let's move on to the SRS RAN project, the code for the 5G. The thing which makes us different is basically complete in terms of like all the functional splits and also the the different O-RAN splits over there, which is like 7.2, which is famous when it comes to using third-party radio units, ORU for short, and then also using USRPs through the front haul interface of ASplit 8. And when it comes to portability, we are not tied down by various other offering which uses Intel FlexRAN, so which is tied to Intel platforms, or DPDK for some kind of like acceleration. We built all of these stacks ourselves. So it can be ported to any platform like x86, ARM, or like AMD. And when it comes to performance, we are able to do 100 megahertz, four layers MIMO, full rate using 6 cores on the Xeon processor. Although you can use a lower end powered machine as well to run 100 megahertz on 4 layer MIMO. And for openness, we have the dual licensing, as I mentioned before, the open part and then also the commercial part. For flexibility, we have different interfaces, and we developed it in a very modular way so that you can have a third-party CU and then a DU from SRS-RAN and then have all these interoperabilities. And when it comes to interoperability, there is we integrated with various third-party core networks and then RUs, and it's been continuously expanding. The development of this new Gnode B started in 2021, and since then we have had totally 4 releases. And just to give you an idea how the CUDU and then all those splits come into picture, you can see over there, there is the end user equipment and then the RU, and then the DU, which is last 1 mile before the radio. And then there is the CU, basically in a country, there is probably 1 or 2 CUs and then probably multiple DUs. And RU is the closest to the user equipment. These are some of the features which you can already find in the the open source repository, the 100 megahertz TDD support and then 50 megahertz FDD support. And the subcarrier spacing we support are 15 kilohertz for FDD and then 30 kilohertz for TDD mainly. And for the MIMO, we basically have the 4 layer support in the downlink, and then for uplink, we just have 1 layer support because MIMO in UL is still in development. And we also support 256 QAM modulation in both DL and UL. And we developed this custom front haul interfaces, which doesn't depend on any of this Intel and DPDK dependencies. And we integrated with various radio units from vendors like Foxconn, Benetel, and Picocom. And also we support accelerators through BBDev interface. One is, ACC100 FEC accelerator. And it's been deployed on Intel, ARM, and AMD, and it's showcased in MWC. And when it comes to performance, we are able to support up to 64 UEs, 24 hours of operation, and then 1.5 Gbps in downlink, and then 200 Mbps in uplink. And a couple of features which are, let's say, on our roadmap, like no concrete timeline yet, but in our roadmap is the splitting of the DU and CU split. Currently, the interfaces are modular, but then there is no split, but we plan to have it. And then the quality of service when it comes to, for example, like voice over NR calls, where we need some kind of like a quality and adhering to quality mentioned by the core network. And then there is the NTN release 17 non-terrestrial networks, which is a huge thing when it comes to release 17 of the 3GPP. And a couple of other power controls and positioning and handovers, etc. When it comes to interoperability, we have already integrated a couple of third-party CUs with our DUs, but we plan to have more of them in the coming months. And then end-to-end tests with real-time controllers via the E2 interface. For the code, you can find it in that link over there, like SRS run project. And in addition to that, we have the discussion forum, which is the first point where people can raise any questions or seek some support when they are facing some issues. And we also have the very good documentation with all the user manuals and app notes for every scenario is for deployment, and we do also publish some papers, reviewed papers on our website using the SRS RAN code. Now let's move on to the use case. The use case mainly which I'm going to talk about is the vertical industries where the they are not like the typical or the average users of a 5G where you consume data, but rather the vertical industries produce data. So there is a really high need for uplink throughput. A couple of industries are automotive test tracks, like the car manufacturers, the data read from the cars. On the test track, it can vary from 150 megabytes per second to 900 megabytes per second, depending on the number of cars on the track. And we also have the sports entertainment, which requires some telemetry or biovitals reported to the central server, for example, where the bit rate required is greater than 200 Mbps, and so on and so forth. And we also have this remote control and machine vision, which has become more and more popular. And they upload like close to like 4K or 8K videos, and that consumes a lot of bandwidth in the uplink. Now let's move on to the challenges. The couple of challenges which we faced while trying to address this use case was the specification states that one cannot have PUSCH, basically the physical uplink shared channel allocated in the same OFDM symbols and the subcarriers in the same slot. And then a spec also states that the value of K1 basically is the number of slots from which you send a downlink control information to the point where you receive the uplink from the UE. It cannot be more than 15 slots. And there is always a need for like one downlink slot in order to schedule like an uplink. Only in the non-configured grant. Of course, there are like two types of grants. One is the configured grant, which basically doesn't require the like the downlink control information. And another restriction, rather, is like we need to use the K2 value is number of slots from the chime you have the from the DCI to the receiving the uplink should be less than the minimum of the K1 values. This is mainly because I'm going to explain in the next slide where you will see how the downlink scheduling gets starved if you tend to use more than one K1. And once the DCI has been sent, you cannot change a field called downlink assignment index. Basically, the downlink assignment index is an index which tells the UE how many, let's say, acknowledgement bits to send back, whether it received the downlink properly or not. So let's move on to this one. Is this visible, or do you need a larger? It's visible, right, at the back? OK, let me just open a different. Ah, OK, 1 second. I think this is the, wait, let me just try zooming in. Wait, I have a diagram which I can show in. Sorry, what?
You have about, let's say, menu with 3 dots, maybe 0s and zoom for the JavaScript.
1 second. Where is it? Oh, yeah, true. It's hard to navigate from here. I don't know where my cursor is. Oh, yeah, found it.
Yeah, that's enter full screen.
I enter full screen, yeah, sure. It's still the same, I guess, right?
Well, slightly.
All right, okay. Okay, let me just try opening in draw.io because I have a bigger diagram over there. All right. It's okay, right? This one? All right, so basically, as you can see here, imagine the scenario where we have this TDD pattern of 7 downlink slots and then 2 uplink slots. The ones which are marked as D are the downlink slots, and then the one marked as F is like the flexible slot. Basically, you can have some number of downlink symbols and then some number of uplink symbols. And the slots which are marked, which are uplink, are marked U over there. And imagine the scenario where, like, you schedule on the slot 0, the PDCCH is basically the control information which tells when to send the uplink. And imagine that it has scheduled a PUSH, the uplink shared channel, on the slot number 8. That's why the K2 value is 8 over there. And then you have another uplink scheduled on the slot number 9. That's why the K2 value is again 8, because like the difference in number of slots is 8. And now that having the PUSH scheduled over there, the DCI has already been sent. So basically, the element in the DCI which says like how many number of acknowledgement bits to set is has already been sent. And let's imagine that at slot number 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, there's a mistake over there. At slot number 4, you want to schedule a downlink, meaning like you want to send a PDSH, the downlink shared channel. But you need to also have a slot at which you can send an acknowledgement saying that I received the downlink. This is not possible mainly because imagine this case, like now the acknowledgement cannot be multiplexed on those 2 uplink slots because the DCI has already been sent. But if it wants to send, it has to send in the next TDD period. But if it wants to go there, the K1 value exceeds the value 15. So basically, this is a scenario where you are literally starving the DL, meaning like you will not be able to schedule a downlink for like a pretty long time. So it could happen that UE never receives a downlink and then it goes out of the network or it detaches from the network. And here is another scenario as well where you have two PDCCH scheduling an uplink. This is a scenario where we allow only one K2 value to be used, but the K2 value is like greater than the minimum of the K1 values. This is second scenario where we allow multiple K2 values, which allows us to schedule multiple PUSH, the uplink shared channel, using one downlink slot. So here you can see the K2 value is equal to 8 for the one of the PUSH scheduled for slot 8, and then K2 value is equal to 9 for the PUSH scheduled in the slot 9. Even in this case also, we have the same issue that the K1 value, like if we want to schedule the downlink, we have to use the next TDD period, which will result in the K1 value going above the limit. All right, then. So the solution to this is mainly to activate the or usage of more than one K2 value only when the TDD pattern has number of downlink slots much less than the number of uplink slots, so that we don't starve the downlink. And also we need to ensure that the K2 value which is being used, the multiple values, they stay less than the minimum of the K1 values, and ensure we schedule the downlink first before the uplink, so that like downlink gets the act scheduled, and then it can be multiplexed on the PUSH. Let me just show you another diagram of. Yeah, this is the TDD pattern where you have, like, as I mentioned, like less number of downlink slots and lot of uplink slots, which is the TDD pattern required for this particular use case. We have the two downlink slots and then seven uplink slots. And imagine the scenario where the slot zero has the downlink scheduled, and its acknowledgement is to be received on slot three. And then imagine that the next slot you'd schedule seven PUSH across different uplink slots. So here the acknowledgement gets multiplexed on the PUSH. So we don't have to worry about the downlink assignment index getting changed, because the DCI for the PUSH is sent in the next slot. All right, now, yeah, basically I wanted to show the same diagram. Here is like a snippet of the like our Mac logs and debug, where you can see the downlink PDCCH, which is scheduling the PDSH, the downlink shared channel, and then we have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, six scheduling the PUSH across different uplink slots. And the downlink assignment index is basically this one, which I was talking about, which tells how many acknowledgement bits is expected. It's not like one-to-one correlation with this one, but just like a log of the Mac. All right, now let's move on to the demo part. Basically, what I'm going to be showing is like the Docker of the Open 5GS core network, and then the Grafana and the GnodeB is running on this laptop. And I think you might all know the USRP B210 from the National Instruments. And this is a 5G modem. So I'm going to be showing a demo of like the use case. All right. So basically here the Open 5GS is running in a Docker, and the iperf running on the UPF, which is an entity from which you can test all kind of traffic. It's packet gateway U in 4G terms, and this is the Grafana running in the SRS Grafana for the metrics. All right. I'm going to be running the SRS G0B here. Let's see whether I can increase the font. All right, and then.
Which is the packet gateway you mentioned?
The UPF. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let me just connect the modem. Yeah, we might have to wait a bit for, yeah, this modem is like a 4G modem in my laptop, but we just have to wait for the 5G modem to get recognized over there. All right, okay, we have the modem recognized. I'm going to disable the modem first so that we have a clean setup. So. All right, here I'm going to start the G-node B. Is this visible from the back, like the terminal, or is it? Do you want me to zoom in a bit more? Yeah, sure. Let me just do that 1 second. All right. Okay. Okay. Now the G-node B is up and running over here. Then. Let me just go ahead and then enable the modem so that we can see the modem getting connected. This is like a console stats. You can see the modem getting attached over there. This is the command which lets me establish a PDN connection so that the modem gets the IP. Okay. First, let me just take the IP from the core network. Okay, it's 100.4. Yeah, now I'm running the iperf over here, so let me just start the. I'm connecting to the server running on the UPF, which has the IP here, and then 300 megabit, and then for the stats. Yeah, the Grafana here. And just to give you an idea, this is running over 40 megahertz of bandwidth, not 50, because USRP B210 acts crazy when using 50 megahertz, even though it supports, I think, 56 megahertz. So this is only running one layer of uplink. As you can see, okay, let me just restart the iperf. Yeah, as you can see, the peak data rate and the uplink achieved is like 136 Mbps. So with MIMO, you can reach even more, and then yeah, you can just multiply by two at least when using 100 megahertz bandwidth. So we are talking somewhere around 300 without MIMO, and with MIMO, you can expect even more. Yeah, that's more or less what I wanted to show. Does anyone have any questions? Or was I too fast?
Please wait for the microphone, Zero, if you have questions.
First of all, thanks for the presentation. Pretty cool to see it working so fast. And I'd like to ask more about the standardization activities right now with regards to LEO satellites and direct connection of the user entities to satellites.
Okay.
How is it going right now? Is there something?
Well, actually, from what I know, because I wasn't involved much in that project, from what I know, recently they launched, I think, a satellite called Blue Walker or something in the September 22. So far, they have had successful trials, like, you know, direct connecting to the mobile. I'm not sure which UE they used for testing. Basically, the SRS was involved mainly in the E-Node B part for the testing and the demonstration purpose.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Surprisingly, this is my first time I have seen in real 5G network here. Yeah. So I have some question. This the UE is some quarter, yeah, some modem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it possible to use some iPhone or?
Yeah, I can connect my iPhone because there is one Sysmacom SIM in my phone as well. Let me just try that. I hope it works because most of the time what happens is like without an external antenna or the GPS, the synchronization is not so good. So
currently there is no GPS though, but is GPS though in using iPhone?
I think I have tried it.
Or without GPS though?
Without GPS though, I did work, but you never know.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Let me just give it a try, because I have the SIM on my iPhone here.
It's just playing lottery. We do have GPS, TOS, and GPS, and everything here, so could also do it at a later point.
Yeah, I think you can see over here, I think number of UEs is two, and then I have, okay, it disconnects because it doesn't have the voice over NR registration, but you can see 5G, or I'm not sure whether the range is that high. You can see the 5G logo without any bars here,
yeah,
because the IMS registration didn't go through.
Okay, let me try it.
Sure, you can give it a try.
I also tried to start a program.
Wait,
yeah, that's why I saw some context release or something.
Yeah,
so
I also tried to connect to the network using one of Galaxy S22, but where I installed, I have still my Telecom SIM card inserted, so the registration will obviously not so successful. And looks like that the COTS UEs from department basement manufacturer seems to be working.
I see. And also, like for the iPhone, the interesting thing is, like, I think if you're running iOS 17.5 or something on above, if you program the network PLMNS 901 or 999 or something, yeah, 999 on any MNCs, it will allow you to connect private network, for example, and it doesn't require IMS at that time. But the only catch is you need to enable the ciphering and integrity protection on both the core and then also on the RAN. I think it's just a configuration matter, so it should work.
Do you need sushi as well?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, for the sushi needs to be encrypted as well. So.
So coming from not having read an awful lot about 5G, I'm just wondering, is what you've done there with basically shifting capacity onto the uplink, Is that something that would be unique to the SRS RAN project, or is it, I mean, it's obviously not out of spec because the devices support it, but yeah. How much is that something that would be
I think offered? It can be done by anyone, but it's just a matter of like how the scheduler is implemented to take care of it, because you can see the commercial deployments is the first slide which I showed where there is like too much heavy downlink. So it's been really tweaked to that. And then if you, for example, buy something which I mentioned as like a radio unit from Benatel and these companies, you will see that the number of TDD patterns they support is very limited. And then all of them, from what I have seen, is like downlink heavy. They haven't taken into consideration this industrial use case at all. So that's the only thing, but it's not like very unique to SRS. Anyone can set this TDD pattern and then probably can achieve it, I would say. So.
Maybe put it like this, any equipment vendor can do it, yes.
Yeah, true.
But with SRS, anyone can do it.
Yeah, true. Right? That's a change.
Okay, then thanks again.